Good morning. Welcome to our guests today. It's good to have you. Most Americans have probably never heard the name Mitsu Fuchida. If you've never heard of Mitsu Fuchida, don't feel bad. Most Americans have never heard his name. But if you're not familiar with who Mitsu Fuchida is, he was the captain in the Japanese Air Force who led the attack on Pearl Harbor December 7th, 1941. And so Mitsu Fuchida, you can imagine after the attack, you know, received all these kind of accolades and praise from the emperor. And a few months after the attack on Pearl Harbor, you may be familiar with a man named Jimmy Doolittle. So Jimmy Doolittle was played, by the way, by Alec Baldwin in the movie Pearl Harbor. And so Jimmy Doolittle, in April of 1942, they wanted to put a spike, in their words, a spike through the heart of the Japanese army after Pearl Harbor. So he led 85, what they call the Raiders, to bomb Tokyo. In April of 1942, they did it. Well, of those 85, most of them got back home, but 8 of them were taken prisoner by the Japanese, and they were tortured relentlessly. These are men in their early 20s. And so Jimmy Doolittle himself was a brilliant man. He had gone to MIT, smart guy, had amazing courage, this guy, just incredible courage. But these 8 men who were being tortured, somebody apparently smuggled to them a Bible. So in between being tortured, these guys actually read the Bible. And they passed it around. They all shared it. Well, Mitsu Fuchida, the guy who led the raid and the bombing, heard about these 8 American GIs. And he went, he's like, I want to see these guys, right? So he goes and in his own words, he wanted to torture them. So he goes and he sees these guys and he's totally perplexed because these American GIs were not vitriolic and hate-filled as he was told by his superiors they would be. They actually had love and forgiveness for the people that were torturing them. And he was so totally taken aback by this that he began to think, what is this Bible thing? So he started reading the Bible, Mitsu Fuchida. Shortly thereafter, he himself became a Christian. Then he became a devout Christian, and he was disavowed, as you can imagine, by the Japanese army, moved to San Francisco, and spent the rest of his life helping the very GIs that he bombed. That, my friends, is the beauty of Christianity. And you know, it's funny, because these American GIs, they never talked to him. They never said, hey, let me tell you about Jesus, brother. He just saw him. He was like, wow, like that's amazing. Here's my point. We are always communicating with other people, even when we don't realize that we're communicating with other people. They're watching us. They're listening to us. It goes like this. If you want to maybe walk away with something this morning, maybe this. We need to listen to what is not being said, and we need to speak to what needs to be heard. I'll say that again. We need to listen to what is not being said, and we need to speak to what needs to be heard. What does that mean? It means, here's my question. What is it that your spouse is telling you without saying it with their words? And if you have to think about that, you're in trouble. What is your spouse telling you without actually using words? Honey, you look tired. You look pooped. Are you okay? What is it that we're not saying that we need to say? Father, look, my wife knows that I love her. I don't have to tell her. Dude, I know she loves you. Tell her anyway. Tell her anyway. We need to listen to what is not being said, and we need to speak to what needs to be heard. You know, we often see the same thing, believe it or not, in the Bible. What is the hidden message in the Bible that's often not said in the Bible? You can get some rich stuff there, you know? I used to teach, I was a chaplain at Bishop Byrne High School. Anybody remember Bishop Byrne High School? Yeah. I loved it. It's the best assignment I ever had. Loved it. And so I loved teaching high school freshmen because, you know, they had no fear to ask anything. Okay? So this one kid, he raises his hand. He's like, Father Ben, did you ever date? And I'm like, yeah, totally, man. I went on dates. He said, wait, somebody actually dated you? And I was like, yeah. You know, you get desperate enough, I guess. I don't know. So this one kid, other kid, he raised his hand, and I knew this kid. He was always like, you know, I was that kid. So he asked me, he said, Father Ben, did Jesus ever go to the bathroom? And I'm like, let's see, what does the Bible say about that? I said, well, let's do the math. Jesus was human. Human beings go to the bathroom, so I think that's a safe bet, right? I don't think the gospel writers wrote about that, but one of the other messages that, what are some of the messages that we see in the Bible? Well, if you think about it, Jesus is God. He could have been born to Bill Gates or Warren Buffett or Jeff Bezos or anybody at any time in history, but he was deliberately chose as the second person in the Trinity to be born into abject poverty. Placed in a manger, years later, he comes into Jerusalem on a donkey. And a few days after that, he goes down on his knees and he washes the feet of his own creation. One of whom would get up and leave the room and go betray him. He knew this as he's washing his feet. So if you had to sum all that up in one word, what would it be? Humility, I think. It's the hidden message there. The pattern, the thread that's running all throughout this man's life, and yet supremely confident in who he was. He was not, you know, Catholicism is not a religion, brothers and sisters. It's a relationship. It's not an organization, says St. Paul. It's an organism. It is the living, breathing body of Christ. Trust me, there is no way over 2,000 years it would still be here. If it were not, we would have messed it up a long time ago. Trust me, I know the clergy, right? We would have messed it up a long time ago. But the Holy Spirit must be there. When we talk about communication, though, good communication, it's important to realize what we should not do. What we should not do. Do you know there's three forms of being stubborn? Did you know that? There's three forms of stubbornness. Stubbornness in thought. People that absolutely refused to think outside of the way they're used to thinking. Stubbornness of action. Everybody remembers Albert Einstein's definition of insanity? You remember that? What, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting what? And this is how they don't think that their actions have consequences. They're stubborn. This happens to addicts a lot. Stubbornness of listening, stubbornness of action, stubbornness of thought. Because the people around them may be trying to help them. Honey, I'm trying to help you. I love you. Nope. Time at Mass, I had everybody stand up. I had everybody at this side of the church move over here, and everybody over here move over here, okay? And they all looked totally horrified, like I had asked them to donate a liver, okay? I said, go. And there's just total horror. So they very slowly moved to a new spot. This one elderly woman, she was walking right across here. She got about right here, and she turned to me, looked at me, and she said, "You're going down, little man." True story. True story. People hate change. They will die on that sword, boy. We get stubborn. Just two little pieces of advice from a man who is himself trying to learn this, okay? Don't be a control freak. That can destroy marital communication. People that are control freaks, they worry about things that don't matter and people's opinions of them that do not matter. I'm not saying other people don't matter. I'm saying other people's opinions of you don't matter. But they will wring their hands again and again and cause added stress. Added stress. Second, pray with your spouse. Pray with your spouse. You've heard me say this before. I'm going to say it until the day I die. I'm not talking about in this building. It's easy to pray with everybody else in this building. Pray at home. And gentlemen, that falls on us because we are the spiritual leaders of our family, which means we need to set the example, gentlemen. Well, Father, I'm not comfortable with that. Well, my friend, get over it. Because I don't know if you've noticed, outside these walls, this culture is in big trouble. And we need leaders, and we need them now. Now. That starts with us. And if you want your children to be that person, you got to set the example, my friend. I'm not talking long hours. I'm talking 5 minutes a week of prayer. You know? I wasn't going to share this, but I'm just going to share it anyway. So recently in our parish, we had three families that have joined the parish, which makes me so happy. So one of the families is from Ethiopia, one of the families is from Cambodia, and one of the families is from Bolivia. Awesome. Love spending time with them. So one of them was telling me recently, privately, and I asked if I could share this, and they gave me permission. But one of them told me that they recently went to one of the masses at another parish in this diocese. And when they walked in, everybody turned around and stared at them. Nobody said, of course, welcome, it's good to have you. Everybody stared at them as if to say, why are you here? Let's just stop there for a second. Just time out, time out, time out. If that was you, how would you feel? Can you imagine you're trying to bring your kids to Mass and give them an exposure to Jesus, and you turn around and everybody's staring at your kids and you? So this is why I'm sharing this with you. Two obvious points. I don't care who you are. That is not Christianity. Number two, just because somebody comes to Mass every day does not mean they are getting closer to God. Let me ask you a question. How can somebody pray the rosary every day, do holy hours, and go to Mass every day and still not get closer to God? Any idea how? Because they're not willing to work on themselves. You can still be stubborn and have smoke coming off your fingers because you pray so many rosaries, right? Show me. There's nothing more repulsive to young people than that. Nothing more repulsive to me. Show me. We need to listen to what needs to be heard, right? What needs to be heard that they're not saying? We need to have courage to speak, brothers and sisters. I'll close with this. So on March 5th, 1983, Pope John Paul II went to Nicaragua. And does anybody old enough to remember the Sandinistas? Remember the Sandinistas? So Daniel Ortega and the Sandinistas, they were controlling Nicaragua at the time. And they were communist. So they told John Paul II, we do not want you here. We do not want you here. And John Paul II said, that is just the type of challenge I love. Licking his chops, this man. So he came anyway. The government didn't want him. He said, well, I'm coming. Put your crash helmet on. So he shows up. They have a big mass, 500,000 people. All the poor people, they're in the back, the very back of this big crowd. In the very front row is Daniel Ortega and all the Sandinistas. And so John Paul II, he's about to go preach, right? So he grabs the microphone and he goes up there. And Daniel Ortega had all the power to the microphone cut so nobody could hear him. So in addition to that, all the Sandinistas in the front, they started throwing trash at the Pope. Paper cups, trash, yelling at him. Doing this, right? Obscene signs. So how do you think he reacted to this, right? So this is what he did. You know the bishop's crozier? That long staff that the Pope has, right? He holds it up, just like this. And he just waves back and forth, just like this, for about 10 minutes. Didn't say one word, just did this for all the people in the back. As if to say, I am united to you. And by the way, you don't have to believe these lies that these people are saying. And you know what? It must have worked, because a couple of years later, the Sandinistas fell. Government collapsed. I know a man from this parish who was there that day. You know what he told me? He said, Father Ben, the Pope didn't say one word, and it was the best homily I ever heard. He didn't say one thing, and it was the best homily I ever heard. This is why I'm sharing this with you. We communicate without realizing we're communicating. We need to listen to what is not being said and to speak to what needs to be heard.